You may be seated. All right, our last case is 11-1759, Disciplinary Counsel versus Dean Edwards Hines. Mr. Weber.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. Fellow jury, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The issue before the court is the proper sanction for a consensual romantic relationship with a client. The board in this case recommended 12 months, stay 6. So we're dealing in this case with an actual 6 months off from the practice. It is our position that the board erred, and it's our position that the recommendation should not be adopted for two reasons. The first is the board's findings regarding aggravating factors. And secondly, even with aggravating factors, the case law from this court supports a lesser sanction.
Counsel, is it, before you go any further, the disciplinary counsel is joining? Is that?
The disciplinary counsel, as I understand it, is in agreement that no more than a stayed suspension is appropriate in this case.
And you're not having a disagreement about a year's stayed suspension, correct?
Well, it's our position that it should be no more than a six-month stayed suspension. But in any event, it should be a stayed suspension. Let me first spend a couple of minutes talking about the board's findings with the—
Let me interrupt you one more time. Does the disciplinary counsel agree that it should be no more than a six-month stayed, or is that the disparity between yourself and disciplinary counsel as to both agree it should be a stayed suspension— And you think it should be no more than six, and what is the disciplinary counsel?
I will defer to Mr. Caligiuri, but I believe it's 6 months stay. But we'll.
So you're both in agreement as to what the sanction should be here?
Well, it's our position that the stayed suspension is appropriate if the court agrees that there were aggravating factors. We believe that this is a public reprimand case when you take out the aggravating factors.
And let me, Mr. Hines.
Let me just.
You really are going to stand here and talk to us about this?
Well, let me just go through the aggravating factors, what the board.
We've
found.
Read the record.
I understand. But this is a consensual romantic relationship case. And when you look at the case law, other consensual romantic relationship cases where there have been public reprimands, the Detweiler case, the Bartels case, the Engler case, those are 4, 5, 6 months consensual relationship cases with clients, no findings of aggravation. Here, the board found selfish motive, failure to acknowledge wrongdoing, and harm to a vulnerable client. And there's no clear and convincing evidence to support these. Turning first to the selfish motive, again, when you look at the other lines of cases where there is a consensual relationship, there is no finding of aggravation of selfish motive in those cases. And what we have here is 8 months of a consensual relationship between a couple who grew very close, according to Ms. Murphy's own testimony. They lived together. They traveled extensively together. They went through counseling together. So this case, from that standpoint, fits within Detweiler, Bartels, Engler, and those line of cases where there is a public reprimand. Same with the vulnerability finding. I think the board made the finding because of testimony at the hearing that Ms. Murphy said she didn't have a choice but to go along with these advances. But when you look at the record doesn't support that. Nowhere in her grievance, for example, does Ms. Murphy say that she never felt she had a choice to go along with this. When you look again at 8 months together, traveling to Europe, throughout the country, those facts do not support a finding of vulnerability as an aggravating factor. That's what we're talking about, aggravating factors.
Excuse me, counsel. Mr. Weber, at paragraph 14, there's a comment that at the transcript, lines 15 to 25, at page 44, there was testimony that she was overwhelmed by very aggressive sexual advances and feared that should she resist him, he would abandon her in the midst of her legal difficulty. So when you say there's no evidence, it appears that at least there's something in the record that suggests there is.
I understand that was her testimony. What I'm saying is there is no clear and convincing evidence when you look at the other evidence that is in the record. Living together for 8 months, undergoing counseling to try to make the relationship work. When they got into the fight that led to the dissolution of the relationship, she was upset by the fact that he was talking with an ex-wife. So when you look at all these factors combined, what I'm saying is that there's no clear and convincing evidence to support the aggravating factor of vulnerability.
Even though the inception of the relationship may have been as described in the transcript.
Well, the inception of the relationship was that she did express an interest through flirtatious exchanges, and Mr. Hines acted on that, and wrongfully so. There's no question. I'm not standing here saying that what Mr. Hines did was wrong. Please don't misunderstand that. It is wrong. In fact, he has admitted from the outset, he admitted in his consent to discipline that he committed wrongdoing. He admitted in the stipulations that he committed wrongdoing. He admitted at the hearing that he committed wrongdoing and assured the board and assures this court it'll never happen again. So for the board to find a failure to acknowledge wrongdoing, there's just no clear and convincing evidence. And that's the standard to find aggravation. And it's that aggravation that increases the sanction, and it just doesn't exist here. The other aggravating factor that was the most concerning to the board was the harm as a result of the misconduct. And what happened is that there was a dispute between them. Ms. Murphy pulled a gun, led to her arrest, ended the relationship, both the romantic relationship and the attorney-client relationship. It just so happened that the decision in the underlying case came out the next day. And Mr. Hines properly wrote a letter to his client indicating that here is the decision, here is the section that talks about how you go about doing objections, and I'm happy to coordinate the transition of the file to new counsel. And she had a 10 or 14 day period to do that, and she chose not to. She chose not to seek an extension. She chose not to obtain new counsel. Instead, she paid the order. I think it was perhaps totaled about $800. So, yes, she was out without counsel. But when we look at the harm, it wasn't that she was not in a position to object. She had that opportunity, and she chose not to. And she just made a financial decision not to.
Counsel, in your objections to the board's report, it says, based on the foregoing, the totality of the circumstances, Mr. Hines respectfully requests that the court reject the board's recommendations or recommended findings of aggravation and sanction, and respectfully requests no more than a stayed suspension is the appropriate sanction. Now you're withdrawing that, and you want a public reprimand?
Not at all. If there's findings of aggravation, if this court agrees that there is aggravating circumstances, then no more than a state suspension is appropriate. But if you take out the aggravating circumstances, we are left with Detweiler, Engler, and Bartels, a consensual romantic relationship where the client's interests were not compromised. The facts of this case fit within that. That's why it went through discipline by consent. Twice, disciplinary counsel agreed, twice, that there were no aggravating factors here. That's worth noting.
When you say it went through agreed discipline, did the relator also concur with the recommended public reprimand sanction?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that question, Your Honor.
Excuse me. I thought you said that this went to an agreed stipulated sanction.
First went disciplined by consent.
Yes.
And then it came back.
At that time, did the disciplinary counsel concur with the public reprimand as the sanction?
I don't believe so. I don't think in the stipulations that went to the board prior to the hearing that there was a stipulation regarding sanction.
Okay.
So if you look at even with the aggravating factors, even if this court were to conclude that they're aggravating factors, to sanction Mr. Hines with actual time off would lead to a greater sanction than some of the more egregious cases that this court sees. I've cited the Burkholder case and the Quatman case and the Moore case, for example. Those are unwanted sexual advances cases with aggravating circumstances, and those resulted in state suspensions. And so even with aggravation, the sanction does not fit. 1 minute about the mitigation. We do have mitigation. Everybody agrees with that there's no prior, cooperation throughout, full and free disclosure to the disciplinary counsel, and a positive reputation in the community. So even with a finding of aggravation, no more than a 6-month stayed suspension is appropriate. Thank you.
Mr. Caligiuri.
Chief Justice O'Connor, distinguished members of this court, Mr. Weber, my name is Joseph Caligiuri. I represent the Office of Disciplinary Counsel in this matter. To be clear, the relator in this matter is agreeing with Mr. Weber in the sense of sanction, that we feel that no more than a fully stayed suspension in this matter would be appropriate. What we disagree on is the aggravating factors. The board in its report found 3 aggravating factors, and its relator's position that there was clear and convincing evidence after the testimony during the hearing to support the board's finding of a selfish motive, a vulnerable client, and a refusal to acknowledge the nature of the misconduct. But we do agree with Mr. Weber in the sense that even with those aggravating factors, when you consider the aggravating factors along with the mitigation evidence in this case, that the sanction should be a fully staged suspension. And that is based mostly on this court's precedent. I won't go through all the cases that Mr. Weber cited, but I would just mention briefly, just a couple months ago in Disciplinary Counsel versus Siewert, this court issued a 6-month stayed suspension for an attorney that engaged in a consensual sexual relationship. Mr. Siewert in that case had previously been disciplined, and the client in the case was a drug-addicted, chemically dependent client. So we had a couple aggravating factors there, yet the case still resulted in a stayed suspension. There was another case that Mr. Weber mentioned, Disciplinary Counsel versus Michael Moore, and that case involved, as Mr. Weber stated, unwanted sexual advances with one female client, and then in another case, an unrelated case with another female client, an actual sexual relationship involving a custody case where her children were at stake, and in that case, a stayed suspension was issued. So that's the basis for relator's position that this case warrants a fully stayed suspension.
Mr. Weber has articulated the Detweiler case as a public reprimand case, and he thinks that this case is similar to that. What is your view as to how this compares to the Detweiler case?
Well, I think if you were to adopt Mr. Weber's argument that this was strictly a consensual sex with a client case and no aggravating factors, you could make an argument that it is analogous to Detweiler. The problem is there are some aggravating factors in this case, and it wasn't just the sex with a client in this case.
It what?
It wasn't just the 1.8J sex with the client. In this case, one of the other charges in the case was an 8.4H conduct adverse reflecting on Mr. Hines's fitness based upon some of his actions after the relationship ended. As Mr. Weber discussed, there was a domestic incident between Mr. Hines and Ms. Murphy. Ms. Murphy pulled the gun on Mr. Hines, and she ended up being arrested. And there was a temporary protection order issued against Ms. Murphy. And while that order was in place, Mr. Hines, who was obviously a lawyer, was trying to contact her via text messaging, encouraging her to respond or basically break the temporary protection order. And that was the reason why we later charged the 8.4H. So I think there's some reason to differentiate this case from the public reprimand cases.
He was the victim of the weapon?
He was. There was a domestic dispute. Apparently, he lost his temper. She drew a gun on him. She left the scene with her children, which was at his house, and she was then arrested that same day.
He suggested that there was an eight-month period when they traveled in Europe. Did I get that right?
The relationship lasted 8 months, and during that time, they took a 10-day trip to Europe together as a family, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Unless there are any other questions, I would just join in respondents' recommendation of a fully stayed suspension.
What is your impression of the mitigation that might be in this case? I think Mr. Weber suggests that there is mitigating circumstances here.
Yes, I think the board was correct, both with the mitigation and aggravation. There, Mr. Hines was cooperative throughout the process. He gave full and free disclosure. He had positive character evidence. So I have no problem with the mitigation evidence. With respect to the board's finding that he did not acknowledge the wrongful nature of his misconduct, my sense is that stemmed from Mr. Hines's initial response to the letter of inquiry, which is stipulated Exhibit 4. And in that instance, when he responded initially pro se, he basically tried to minimize the conduct and looked to cast blame upon Ms. Murphy. And I think that's where the board justifiably found that to be an aggravating factor. At the hearing, he admitted, as he admitted to the misconduct, as he did with the consent agreement that was rejected. Thank you.
Mr. Weber?
Just one point as a follow-up. The 8.4H, as I understand it, is not a standalone violation with respect to Mr. Hines attempting to communicate with Ms. Murphy after the relationship deteriorated. I think that circumstance resulted because Mr. Murphy needed to get in touch with her because she had worked in his office and he needed to get some matters relating to files that she worked on. So I don't believe those circumstances warrant an increase in the sanction. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, would you adjourn court, please?
Hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.